Are in listen-only mode.
Welcome to today's SNEB webinar, sponsored by SNEB's Public Health Division. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Associate Executive Director of SNEB and glad to have you with us today. If you look in your GoToWebinar tool panel, you should see a handout that you can download and follow along with the presentation today. I'll let you know in advance, Julie has some videos linked, or some web links, and including a video linked off of this PowerPoint. And it may be a little difficult to hear when we broadcast that live during the webinar, but it is included as a link in the handout, so you can reference that later as you follow along. And there's also some sections where she's going to encourage some audience participation. So please type your responses in the chat or the question block as we go through the presentation. We'll also take questions at the end of the webinar, so please type those in the question block as well, and we'll moderate those to our presenter. And watch for an email from me on Thursday of this week. We're recording today's session, so the follow-up will include the recording, the handout again, and the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. And when I close out the webinar, there'll be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on this session and ideas on future topics. So our moderator today is Virginia Quick. She's in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at Rutgers University, and she's the chair of SNEB's Public Health Division.
Great. Thanks, Rachel, for that nice introduction. We are very excited for the Public Health and Nutrition Division to have sponsored this presentation today by one of our own members, Julie Buck. Currently, Julie Buck teaches health, nutrition, and food safety to community members in Bannock County, Idaho. And Julie Buck is also the administrator for the SNAP Ed Eat Smart Idaho grant in Southeast Idaho. Her current research interests include hand washing efficacy in elementary school children and self-efficacy among participants in the food preservation course. And we're very excited to have her today to talk on the topic on hunger issues, engaging participants for lifelong change. So we look forward to the presentation. I'll hand it off to you, Julie.
Thank you. I really appreciate this opportunity. I just want to remind everyone on the call that, like many of you, you have land grant institutions in your state, and the University of Idaho and Idaho State University are my area land grant institutions. Extension is definitely part of that effort, and it's a statewide network of faculty and staff. We have 42 counties in our state and 12 research and extension centers. As a University of Idaho Family and Consumer Sciences assistant professor, my focus areas, as Ginger mentioned, are food safety, nutrition, and health. Working for Extension is much like a community dietitian position. Not all FCS educators are dietitians, but I happen to be. And Eat Smart Idaho is Idaho's name for a combined expanded food and nutrition education program, or FNEP, and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program Education, or SNAP Ed. So just to give you a little bit of an idea of how Eat Smart Idaho works in Idaho, we provide nutrition education for low-income Idahoans. This will be a lot like your programs in your state. And we have classes that are taught at emergency food sites, food stamp offices, adult rehabilitation centers, public housing sites, and schools with they qualify because they have a high number of free and reduced lunch participants at those school sites. So the participants learn the basics of nutrition, smart shopping, food safety, preparing quick meals, and managing limited grocery dollars. So basically in our state and within the nation, there's two USDA grants that support this effort. Definitely SNAP Ed is in partnership with the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, and FNEP itself. So in Idaho, just for example, in 2012, we were able to have 6,000 adults and 13,000 children participate in these nutrition efforts. And I'm just setting you the basis for our discussion today, and I think by relating my experiences in my state, you can see how your states can also reach out in likewise manner. So it's well found that healthier people contribute more to the economy and more to their family's financial well-being because they have the energy and the health to do so. So our goal here, and I hope it you'll see how it patterns with the national effort, is to improve shopping and meal planning skills, their healthy eating habits, and the motivation to be physically active. So we actually have shown that we improve food security and reduce the risk for diet-related diseases. And I'm excited to share with you some of our programming today. I want to refer you definitely to FNEP. FNEP, or Expanded Food and Nutrition Education Program, was established in 1969, and it identifies those, you know, it tries to reach out and employ paraprofessional staff that can help influence nutrition, physical activity throughout the nation. And just to review for all of us on the call and those that listen, we're going to take a look at persons with low resources in general, such as housing, money, health care, and basic daily needs. You may be aware of assistance in your area and the persons that need it, but they're not matched to each other. We're nutrition educators such as ourselves and those you might know are located throughout most communities, and we're all ready to teach. And there seems to be challenges that occur between communicating what type of services are available to a specific group and finding a match to best meet those needs. So today our objectives are to discuss what challenges we as educators face in your specific location, and let's, you know, see what we can do to provide opportunities for those persons that are here on the webinar and who may listen to it, that you can brainstorm some ideas of ways to reach out to those that are in need dependent on your resources in your area. So we'll be addressing your programming challenges generally, and I'm hoping that you'll identify four new ideas to create some successful programming efforts in your area. And I am, as Rachel mentioned, going to encourage you to participate in the chat in a little while where we can actually list and I can moderate that discussion about what's working in your area specifically. Let's go back a little bit to hunger in America and take a look at our national programs that are available to us. I started by outlining a little bit about FNEP, Expanded Food and Nutrition Education Program. And we, throughout the nation, we help recruit families and reserve referrals from current and former participants, neighborhood contacts, and community organizations and agencies. So we take those persons who are working for us and we train them and supervise them at a county level. And SNAP Ed, as you know, is it reaches about 40, SNAP benefits reach about 46 million low-income Americans, helps put food on their table. And the large majority of households receiving SNAP include children, senior citizens, and individuals with disabilities, and working adults. And it's estimated that two-thirds of SNAP benefits go to households with children. And so we're fortunate throughout our country to have SNAP education efforts throughout the state, and we also have some other resources available to us, and I just wanted to share those with you. I know we all have our favorites, but I wanted to make you aware of some that you might not have looked at recently. So let's take a look at ALICE. ALICE is an acronym that stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, and Employed. And so this is an effort that was started by the United Way, and it provides a framework, language, and tools to measure and understand the struggles of the growing number of households in our communities who do not earn enough to afford basic necessities. And so that population is called ALICE. And so this is a national research initiative that helps stimulate meaningful discussion and attract new partners. And I was able to find out that this program itself has grown from a pilot in Morris County, New Jersey in 2009 to the entire state of New Jersey in 2012. And then they developed this Pacific Northwest, and that's where I was able to find a lot of data for my state. So it's definitely a site that I would suggest you go look at if you need data for the for your state about who's getting help but who is also income constrained. And this is a great resource. I also wanted to just talk a little bit about the food bank effort in America called Feeding America. If you haven't visited this site lately, I would highly recommend it. Not only can you go and find where there are food banks in your area, but they also have materials available that we have found extremely helpful. So, for instance, as I'll tell you in a little bit, we have food bank and food pantry efforts in the eastern part of the state, and there are handouts that we have that are free to download, and you can actually modify those PDFs and put your logos on them and use them in your area. So we definitely have had really good success using the food bank materials, and they also have terrific recipes for using the food bank foods and also commodities. This is really what a lot of community members want, is they want recipes. And so we're able to provide that through our FNEP and SNAP-Ed education, but on a national level, there are lots of resources available there. And, of course, we have the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, website that I really like this source for statistics. They have a lot of data here. This isn't, you know, a place that has a lot of handouts and tools such as that, but they definitely have a lot of good information. So I wanted to show you this Feeding America video. I'm going to give it a try. Let's see. I'm gonna hold off on that. I don't see it working on my side of the presentation. So what I'd encourage you to do at this time is, would you type in the chat, those of that are live on the call? I'm interested to know, what are some of your favorite national resources for nutrition information that specifically addresses hunger? So can you see that you have a chat box available to you?
Yeah, either the chat box or the question box, we can see either one of those. So if you want to go ahead and type your suggestions for resources, we will kind of moderate those. And also, when I close the webinar, I'll make sure to summarize those so that all the participants can see your suggestions. So thank you, Emily, for typing in our first suggestion.
Oh, this is fabulous. So Nonprofit Food Research in Action, so FRAC, I do get their e-newsletters in my email feed. And we recently, Lisa, thank you, we recently shared the USDA Mixing Bowl, What's Cooking. If you need recipes, this is a great connection for the community and for nutrition education in the area. And I definitely was going to mention SnapVet Connections. That's a great asset. There's a lot of usable information there. So thank you. Oh, so here's a specific one for Oregon, Food Hero. And excited that Oregon has a specific effort there that they have available. And I've definitely heard about that because we have some very active Northern Idaho, Eat Smart Idaho educators that are very close to Oregon and do a lot of partnering. Okay, so thank you. The Spend Smart, Eat Smart in Iowa has a connection. We learn from you. These will be great. And I like that we're referring each other to these so that we can, you know, at least we know these persons have reviewed these sites, and then as educators, we can go through these and see what we can pull and recommend for our other educators in our area. So the Capital Area Food Bank in Washington, D.C., which is a member of Feeding America, has a healthy recipes database. And Kids Cooking from Kansas State, eatwellbewell.org is Arizona's Nutrition Network. Oh, this is just exactly what I'd hoped for today. So, and I'm going to, you know, you can obviously keep typing because this will be helpful, but I verbally have mentioned them, so hopefully that will be helpful for those that listen later. Thank you so much. And I just would refer you to Feeding America's Feeding America has a nice video, just for the sake of time and because I don't want to have a link you can't hear. I'm going to go on to my next slide. So this is a Venn diagram, and I really like this because I have found that it helps to illustrate the interconnected nature of programming to persons with low resources. And obviously this could apply to a lot of people, but as I've worked more and more with persons with low resources, I found that there's some key components to programming that have really helped our eastern side of the state effort. So obviously at the bottom in the lighter blue, we have those persons that are low resources. And basically this means it could be housing, heat, power, it could be clothing, food, obviously it could be education, or disability services. It just, you know, encompasses a wide range of persons that have specific needs and don't have the means to meet those needs. So I'd like you to consider the location of your nutrition education or interventions. And I'd like you to consider the following. Have you found that location is so important for the success of an effort? What I mean is, I think more than with any other group of persons I've worked with, I think location is paramount to having a successful education program with persons with low resource for the following reasons. One, I think they really prefer to come to a place that's familiar to them. And most often it is not my extension office, which is up on the hill. I'm located in a more higher income area. And number two, they don't have the money to travel to a faraway location. So we have found more success when we go to where those persons live. So this has created the opportunity for us to go out of our personal favorite classroom to teach out of, which is obviously at my office. And so our nutrition advisors go to where these people can be found. So this creates an opportunity to establish some partnerships at those locations. So, for instance, we really like to use our ICAP centers, so Centers for Action, in our counties, because that's where they go to pick up commodities, or that's where they go to get checks, and they know that location and they're comfortable and those locations are in their communities. Second of all, and so I'm curious, let's just take a minute because we have time. I'm curious if you'll type into the chat or the question box, what are some locations in your communities that seem to work well for nutrition education for persons with low resources? Certainly, we have education in food banks or food pantries. Oh, thank you. Taryn mentioned churches and community centers. I think faith-based groups, that's their church, that's what they're comfortable with. Libraries, we recently set up two summer school programs in our local libraries, which are in communities that are very low resource. And thank you, Lisa, for mentioning health clinics. That's where they go for services that they're comfortable with. Anne mentioned the health services WIC sites. And, Debbie also mentioned drug and rehab centers. We also have some programming with rehab programs that work really, really well. And I, like Sharon mentioned, the schools in the lower income areas, so that's where we do a lot of our summer programming. So I hope that this will give you some ideas of where to go to set up programs in your communities where persons feel especially comfortable, they're going to see people they know, and it's a setting that is really comfortable for them. So thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Let's take a look at the language. Now, this concept of language, obviously, it's their native language. But I'd also like you to consider the literacy level. And I'd also like you to consider if you have some non-reading materials so that we have low literacy that's very visual. And then I'd also encourage you to consider some culturally sensitive materials. So not only do you have photos of persons in the culture that you're going to be teaching, but you also are noticing and using materials that have foods that are relatable with your clientele. So I know we definitely have English and Spanish is accessible throughout our country, but I also know in our state we are having such an insurgence of refugees actually to the western part of our state. And so I'd really encourage you to find that as a possible audience. Those persons certainly have low resources as they're coming into our country and locating themselves with persons that are similar to them. And so we're reaching out in our areas of the state to particularly work with refuge communities. So Would anyone on the call like to share any successes with any refugees that you've had in your area? And you can just type in the chat box if you'd like. And Rachel, I made my chat box key go away, so, or Ginger, if you could help facilitate that or help me get my button back, that would be great.
To get your button back, if you, do you see your GoToWebinar toolbar? At the
yes.
very top, there should be some options that say File, Options, and View. Under View, make sure that the question and the chat blocks are checked, and that should make them appear.
Thank you so much. So the, I'm back. So the question is, is anyone reaching out to those communities that have refugees? And if so, do you want to comment on what's working? And while you're typing in, I would also like to go to the next section of our Venn diagram, and I'd like to discuss briefly what is working for involvement. And when I talk about involvement, I don't just mean attendance. I mean specifically, how are you engaging the clientele? I've been translated while I'm presenting. I don't speak fluent Spanish, so obviously that being translated is one of those parts where you can get people involved. But are you using some experiential learning techniques so that they're actually practicing what you're doing? So how are you getting them to participate at their comfort level? So I think the key there is at their comfort level. And as educators, you know, it's like moving to the next stage of educating. Most of us can create really good curriculum, but how are we getting it so that they'll really want to be involved so that they're comfortable? Do we need to sit down when we teach? Do we need to dress more comfortable? Do we need to change our vernacular or how we communicate? So I've noticed that some people are typing in about how to involve refugees. So Debbie mentioned that she's going to Head Start centers with a large immigrant population. Debbie has interpreters on staff for when she works with parents, and also cooking. What a great opportunity, which doesn't need a translator oftentimes, where we can have a medium of education that can bridge those cultural needs that we have. So thank you for sharing those ideas for using immigrant or refugee education. So hopefully that'll be helpful to you. All right, let's get specific. Let's talk about some other effective programs that I want to just share with you to give you an idea. We approach our statewide effort in Idaho within the different extension districts in our state. So that's my frame of reference. You may look at yours a little differently in your state or area of the country that you live in, but I think just for the purposes today and for my comfort zone, I'll just express some avenues that we're looking at. So if we have four districts in our state with extension, we have the Northern, Western, Southern, and Eastern. And I administer nutrition education efforts in 9 area counties in the eastern part of the state. So I supervise a program coordinator, and the two of us manage 8 nutrition advisors in our area. And these are paraprofessionals that have been trained to teach basic nutrition and food safety and physical activity. Some of them are lay persons that have never had any nutrition education, and we provide all of that nutrition education and certification to work with our programming. So I want to just share a few areas that are working really well in my side of the state. I'll just speak for myself. So statewide, we have a messaging campaign. So are you aware of any state messaging campaigns that are available for you to partner with? We are having our launch this in June for our Long Live Idaho campaign, and I'm just really excited to have an effort that we can promote and share materials with throughout our communities. So I would encourage you to find out if there's a nutrition-related, hunger-related campaign in your state or country that you can work with. Let's talk a minute about pantries. We have been able to find pantries in the most interesting places. Did you know that some of your schools may have pantries that aren't on any state registry because they've been grant funded? We obviously have aware of pantries that are associated with the National Food Bank, but we've found pantries in churches, in schools, in grade schools even have pantries. We've found pantries in faith-based groups. We found them in alternative schools. So take a look at schools that where high school age youth go because they didn't fit the public school model. So we've just been really pleased to find pantries. And so one of some of our efforts include doing an assessment in the pantry. So we'll basically, for instance, I'll just talk about a citywide homeless shelter that had a pantry. And we had our nutrition advisor go into the pantry and do an assessment. So what does that mean? She goes in and takes a look at how the pantry is laid out. Is there any signage? Has there been any rotation of food products in the pantry? Is there proper ventilation? So it's a lot of components that can go into this review of this pantry. And I myself and my coordinator went with our nutrition advisor to our homeless shelter here in my city, and we took our gloves and wore our grubby clothes, and we had a work day in our pantry to help get started because the needs in that pantry were so major, and no one had been cycling those foods and rotating the foods through. So working with the director of that shelter and the manager of that shelter, we were able to be a free program to go into their pantry and help them get set up so that we can go back and check back occasionally to see how the pantry's doing. You know, as you know, you want to teach them how to do this so they can be independent from us eventually. So this obviously would be an after photo of what a pantry looks like. They certainly don't start out to look like this, but once, you know, we can go in and help them have a thermometer for their refrigerators and their freezers at their pantry sites, and have a training with their manager and director so that they can be self-sustaining once we go. So that's just a little bit about pantry efforts in the eastern part of our state. I want to talk about food drives. Now we know that there's national food drives, there's church school drives, school food drives, but how do we make them be a healthy food drive? So perhaps you could partner with those persons who organize a food drive and educate them on how to have a healthy food drive. So it just so happens that the National Food Bank website has a handout on what foods are healthy in each of the food groups to donate. And so we've taken these materials and and added our necessary logos for our partnering agencies in our state and been able to educate those persons participating in the food drive. So this could be community members. This picture happens to be at a school, so we actually found a school that does a food drive, and we proposed to the principal that we have some nutrition, healthy food drive nutrition classes. We gave them a couple of options. You know, what would work well for your school? Could we do an assembly where we reach hundreds of students at one time? Or could we do a classroom nutrition class? And we gave them the option according to what worked best for their school district. So just to give you an idea, in February of this year, there was a school that was had a goal of 1,500 items of food would be donated. And so you kind of get the idea that they lined these up in the hallway of a particular hallway in the school. And after the students were educated, of course, they did this donation. Flyers were sent home with parents. Education occurred at the school. And as a result, they had 1,501 food items donated, which weighed approximately 1,360 pounds. And we actually categorized the food according to food group. And this was just such a good experience for the school and the youth that they have asked us to come back again and facilitate that next year. So that would be something that has worked well in our state, and I would just encourage you to see if that's a possibility in the areas that you have responsibility over. Farmers markets are a great opportunity for partnering, and in throughout our state we have various levels of involvement going on, and I would encourage you to see if they accept ESB cards for those persons that can go ahead and swipe their cards at farmers markets. That's been a great option. We can also go in and do food demos or taste testing if that's something your agency has funding for. And then if you're not aware of the Smarter Lunchroom movement, I'd encourage you to go to their website. If you'd like to have interventions in a school that would help with working with those good foods that are being served. So just to give you an idea of how Smarter Lunchroom program works, there's an online training that you can take if you're having interventions in this effort, and then there's a needs assessment that can be performed in the school that's participating. And this is really an opportunity to provide feedback to the school on areas in their lunchroom that has been identified for improvement. So obviously, spotlighting those food service workers is really important for the Smarter Lunchroom effort, and that they're the food experts in the school, and highlighting them is really important for engagement. So I hope this will give you some ideas of areas that have worked really well in our state, and we'll have an opportunity to share some other ideas in just a moment. I want to talk about partnerships. This is really key to any effective effort for hunger, and so I would encourage you to categorize your partnerships. By doing this, we were able to see in our district what are we missing? What agencies are we not connecting with? And I just wanted to share a few of them in our eastern part of Idaho. And so, again, we wanted to show how the schools are split up. There's different – this is how we've split up the state as far as extension goes. And then I know that within the Eastern District, I'm responsible for all the school districts in this side of the state. And so then I can ask myself, have I connected with A, B, and C school districts and what are my efforts in those areas. So I would encourage you, if you haven't, to do the same. And then take a look at the businesses that you're partnering with. You know, creating partnerships really takes trust and commitment on both parts. We have to work on continued engagement and be really flexible. And, you know, many of these partnerships have been established. We have a worker in our office that's been working in FNEP for 30 years and a SNAP-Ed person that's been here for 20. So these partnerships have been established for decades in our side of the state. So take a look and see what agencies and businesses you're partnering with. And I listed, you know, the youth programs in your area, the food banks and pantries I've already talked about. Have you taken a look at job placement programs? We've found that a lot of those persons that are trying to get back in the job workforce, they have to go through different trainings, and this is a great opportunity to partner to provide nutrition education because we want them to be a healthy contributor to the community. So that's been a great source for placement in our area for our nutrition advisors. And then if you haven't explored probation or people that are working on getting out of probation in the legal system, we have success with adults and youth in our area. We've also had advisors that have worked with the prisons in our area. So it takes someone who has empathy and is comfortable in that setting. Just to give you an example, at my office here at the Extension office, I have a group of adolescents that come in that are on probation, and I teach them twice a month a nutrition education cooking experience. And their probation officers come with them. I never have felt at risk. Maybe it's because I've raised 6 children. I also don't feel intimidated by youth or adolescents, but I'm able to come to a place where my empathy and my nutrition education just flows, and I can actually forget that they're on probation and that they have lots of tattoos and piercings. It doesn't even affect me anymore. So I would encourage you to take a look at other businesses that work with persons on probation. And then the far right image, I just listed some of our agencies that and programs that we partner with, and we've mentioned a lot of these already. And we have obviously some federal agencies that we partner with. We've had grants from ConAgra, National 4-H, NIFA, and we have had a lot of agencies that we've partnered with over the years. So, of course, when we partner with national organizations and universities, they want surveys and they want data that they can use to prove effectiveness and to show linkages throughout the state. So as a statewide effort in Extension, we provide and have completed thousands of surveys annually. And I already told you in our state that our Eat Smart Idaho efforts reach about 6,000 adults and 13,000 children. Imagine processing and collecting and processing those surveys. So you might be familiar with the web-based nutrition education evaluation reporting system. It's called WebNEARS. And this is a secure system. It's designed and hosted and maintained by Clemson University. And it was launched in October of 2012. And this is where we uplink our surveys to. And this provides an opportunity for national programs to go in and gather the data that they'd like to look at. So basically, you can generate a lot of reports, you can manage projects, you can do diagnostic assessments, you can export summary data, and this is really helpful to make sure that we're taking care of the national surveys that we're gathering. Now, we also have local surveys that we would gather data for. For instance, this summer, we have a partnership with a 4-H grant, and so we'll be just collecting those surveys and just mailing them to the coordinator in our state. So I would encourage you to take a look at the surveys you use, and also there's also national surveys that have been validated that you can use that are able to gather some behavioral change that occurs. And just to leave us time for questions and answers towards the end, I wanted to just spotlight 4 effective community efforts, and then you be thinking or typing in your effective community efforts that you've had go on, and then we'll review those in just a minute. So this upper left corner are 2 of our nutrition advisors teaching at a senior education site on how to use healthy recipes for food bank and commodity foods. So they give a very short actual food demo using the actual food. We've partnered with the food bank in Idaho, and we're able to get those foods ahead of time and come up with recipes to use those food bank foods or commodities, demonstrate those recipes while those senior citizens are waiting in line, or catch them just before they get in line for their food distribution. And then I wanted to just have you refer to the lower left where there's the cooler and the drink water image. This is a small county food distribution site in our northern part of our district. And this sandwich board was put together by our nutrition advisor. And she's basically letting those people that wait in line for quite a while to get their box foods that we're going to have a drink water message. And so she's able to work the whole line as these people are waiting in line and provide them with not only some nutrition information that's helpful to them, but also about programming in their county. So that's been really helpful. And then this wheel that's in the middle of the image, this is actually a wheel that we've owned in our district for quite some time, but we repurposed it to work with a 4-H grant with the youth. And so basically we have some questions that are nutrition related, and the participants are able to spin the wheel, and then according to the number on the wheel, we ask a nutrition related question, and they are able to learn and answer the question, and then they're given a non-food reward that's been funded by this effort, such as a measuring spoon or a cup. So that's a lot of fun to have something at a health fair that attracts attention and it gets them involved. And then this far right image is actually myself standing up, and then our bilingual advisor. We're at a health fair that's in part, it's actually at a grade school and middle school, and this is teaching. We had about 400 school-aged children walk by our booth where they had a brief discussion about proper hand washing. So that's been a lot of fun, those type of efforts. So can some of you, looks like you already have. I asked you for programs that work well in your area, and is there anything that you'd like to share on the call of programs that are working well in your purview, items that you're responsible for, and just to kind of generate some ideas with those on the call? You go ahead and type into the question box or the chat box. AMP, you're good. Runs an online health food drive available across the country. Thank you, Emily. I'll just let you go ahead and type in, since I know I want to leave some time for Q&A, and just go to our next slide. I've went ahead and just listed some of the resources for today. These are actual links to those that I've mentioned. We had a participant mention SnapEd Connection. I did also. There's the SNAP fact sheet that's helpful. And then I listed the website for ALICE, and you can see if it's United Way is partnering for your state. FNIP is always a good website. And then I wanted to list a faith-based group if that might be particular of interest to you in your area of responsibility. And then just in our area, in our state, how we package our efforts for FNIP and SNAP-Ed, that's our personal state website. I really appreciate your time today and interest in this important worldwide concern. I really appreciate you sharing either on the webinar today or later when you view this webinar. And I'd really encourage you to reach out to your immediate communities to coordinate hunger or relief efforts and nutrition education for those in need. If I can be of any resource or if you want to collaborate with me, there's my contact information, and perhaps I taught online for 3 years, so we always posted our image so you could see who you've been talking to. And I just wanted to end with just a very brief experience, and then hopefully we'll have some questions and answer time. But I had the opportunity to go participate in a food delivery system, and I went as a participant. I took off my name badge. I had my regular coat on. It was right before Thanksgiving, and I got my number at a food distribution site that services about 300 people. Fortunately, my number was about 60, so I only had to wait in line for the 60th person to go through the line to get their box. But I was able to participate as a participant. I wasn't getting the food for myself. I was getting it for someone who had just gone through surgery, and I wanted to see what that felt like and what it looked like and what it sounded like. And perhaps you could have the opportunity to go participate as just a regular person and see what those distribution sites feel like. And then I believe I'm better able to have increased my empathy and increase my programming efforts, because I know what it's like to go at a food site and receive food and talk with the persons there and see, you know, that it's nice to have a beverage there, and it's nice to be able to have something that works well. So I'll go ahead and stop talking and see if there's any questions or answers that I can help you with, questions that I can help you with.
Great, Julie. Lovely presentation. I think I really enjoyed hearing all of your prior experiences in trying to work with communities with hunger issues. And, you know, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in the question box. I think I might want to start off with a question first while I wait for other questions to come in. But I was really curious to know what has really helped you in a lot of your successes with some of these programs. Is there one thing in particular that you believe kind of really has been like the key?
I think it's what I ended with. I think it's coming from trying to put myself in someone's shoes that experiences hunger. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you know, we've had food insecurity in the past where we've had to choose between rent and food. Mm-hmm. But I think when I can sit down next to somebody who is in need and put into place some empathy, then I can better address their needs. I think that's probably been, I should have done it sooner in my career. I should have done it sooner in this particular effort in my eastern part of the state.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. So we do have a couple of questions. One, what advice can you offer to forming relationships with agencies who want to work in their own silo?
Okay, we have some resistance. You know, we have those that we have parallel organizations, parallel efforts, and it feels to them that maybe they'd be relinquishing participants or not. You know, we don't really want to partner with you because we'll give something up. And so we've tried a couple different things. First of all, a lot of the times we're on the same advisory committees, and so they know we're on the same page as far as efforts go. And I think meeting with them privately and going to their office, go on their turf. You know, I don't invite them to my place, but go to their turf so that they have the upper position and we are not threatening to them, and truly explain our program and be very specific on how we can partner without drawing away from each other's efforts. Mm-hmm. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, I think it does. Great. Thank you. So I was a little bit, I'm curious about the farmers market. I know in some instances it can be challenging to get people to the farmers markets, especially if it's a population that has not many resources for transportation and so forth. Do you find that there are barriers for your participants in getting to farmer markets, and are there any ways you kind of work with getting around that?
Yes, so the successful farmers markets in our state, we actually have a farmers market truck. Can you imagine how awesome that would be? You know how they have food trucks?
Oh, wow.
They might have a mobile food market truck that kind of goes around. How can we take it to where they're at? I also have interest in having a garden for low-resource persons, because a lot of gardens and communities, they have to pay to use the space. So I'm working on and have some interest in developing a community garden that is a need-based rather than ability to pay. I think once you can get the farmers market to accept SNAP funds, then half of your battle is won, because if they know that they can go to their farmers market and use their card, then we can market at our nutrition education sites and at our classes that we have, you know, meet us at the farmers market. We'll be having a food demo. We also talked on our call recently. You know how you have grocery store tours? We thought we would just do a farmer's market tour. So we would invite a class to meet us at the farmer's market, and we would actually walk with them through the farmer's market to demystify and to help them see what it's actually like.
That's a great idea. Great idea. I don't know if it looks like we don't have many other questions, but I know we're kind of running out of time. But do you have any last words of wisdom or thoughts you'd like to share, Julie?
I know that there's a lot of agencies working with hunger in our country, and there's lots of right paths to choose. I think it's not which one is the best, but which one for this moment in time is a great partnership to make at this time. Doesn't mean we're excluding the other partnerships. And I just think that it's easier to focus on, right now we have four that we're focusing on. So that if you pick and choose to put your efforts into a channel for a certain period of time, you establish that linkage, get it up and running, then we can move on and just have a supervisory effort in the future. I think that's worked really well for us.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I truly do believe collaborating and partnership is a good way to go. So I appreciate, again, your webinar today. And I guess we'll let Rachel close out today's presentation with some last-minute things. So thank you again, Julie.
You're welcome.
Yes, excellent. Thank you very much, and thank you for the Public Health Division for organizing this webinar. Just a reminder that there'll be a short survey when I close out the session, and we appreciate your feedback. And then I will get an email out by Thursday of this week with a link to the recording, the slides, your CEU certificate, and I'll do my best to summarize some of the suggestions that were made through the question box. Those might be good resources for you to follow up in the future. SNEP does not have any new webinars on the schedule, but I do have two that are being planned. There's kind of a sarcopenia webinar being planned by the Healthy Aging Division, and that should be announced soon for mid-June. So keep your eyes open for that next session. Thank you.